Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On today's show, we're talking sports, and we do have lots to talk about. College football's big climax set for Monday with number one Florida State battling number two Auburn in what is sure to be a historic game, the last of its kind, as the BCS prepares to adopt a playoff system next year. Also, we have a lot of qualifying competition happening this month that'll determine who goes to Sochi, which is sure to be an interesting Olympic Games, even beyond the sporting competition. Joining us today via the phone lines, thanks to the snowstorm, is director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication and our own sports commentator, Keith Strudler. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But we love your phone calls. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Hey, Keith Strudler, thanks for offering to come all the way up here, and I appreciate you even thinking about that on a day like today.
I did think about it. I really just wanted to get away from my kids for an hour.
Well, you see, there you go. There's always a silver lining.
Yeah, it's very isolated. I'm sitting in our studio right now, so I hope it feels like we're together, but it certainly feels like I'm in a remote locale right now.
Well, it's close enough for radio, and it is a good day to be hunkered down inside if you are at home. Good for you. Stay warm. If you're at work, drive safely on your way home, because the driving, not all that good today. 800-348-2551. Before we get to many things today, I do want to warn you, Keith, that sometimes we do these programs and you'll have to answer questions about sports you know not that much about. I give you an example. A year or two ago, I had my good friend Mark McGuire, who for a long time was a great sports writer for the Times Union, and we were talking, I think, about the spring training or something about baseball. Anyway, Mark took three or four calls about curling, which he didn't really know too much about. So I hope you're ready to think fast on your feet today.
No, absolutely. In fact, I've spent the last 48 hours straight watching nothing but skeleton trials for the Olympics, so I feel pretty prepared.
Fair enough. Well, let's start with something that I can at least talk a little bit about, and that's college football. Great Rose Bowl yesterday. And the national championship coming up. First of all, let's get your thoughts on the game last night.
Well, the game last night or the game yesterday afternoon?
Well, late afternoon. It ended.
Let's talk about the Rose Bowl, because the game last night became comical at some point.
No, I mean the Rose Bowl, which started at 5.
And the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's a big statement game for the Big Ten, obviously. And the Big Ten needs some redemption. I think they were hoping that Ohio State might have brought that to them. Certainly they were able to hire the biggest name coach right now in the business, maybe outside of Nick Saban. So I think there was all season this aspiration that perhaps Ohio State would get a chance to play in the national title game. I don't know that they would be able to beat Florida State, because Florida State is just so remarkably athletic. So I think this is a very good win against a very good Stanford team. You had two teams that play relatively smart football, again, somewhat different than what we watched in the evening, where it was kind of pinball football. But I think, again, it's a marquee win for Michigan State. This is probably one of the, you know, three or four most important wins in their history. They're not Michigan, so they need these kinds of victories, and it'll help quite a bit with recruiting. It also maybe is makes a case for actually playing defensive football, which is not something we see a whole lot of these days.
Not even in the NFL. I mean, it's quite amazing. And, you know, somebody made a comment toward the end of that game, nobody's happier at this moment than the head of the Big Ten.
That's right. And because their style of play is predicated on slowing it down and playing, you know, 3 yards in a pile of dust. They have to. They play in those weather conditions. They don't necessarily recruit the same kinds of athletes they're getting in Texas, in Florida, where you get the sprinters who want to be outside all the time. So I think they have to be able to create a style of play that, you know, this style of play, and they have to be able to win doing it. Now, the other thing that kind of played out in that game, obviously, is that Stanford usually can dominate the line of scrimmage because of their size and their intelligence. And I think when they're matched up against a team like Michigan State, which is also big, physical, and plays smart football, I think that was a very advantageous matchup for Michigan State. I don't know that I like Michigan State against hardly anyone in the top tier of the SEC. You know, LSU put a you know, took care of Iowa yesterday. Mm-hmm. The SEC schools, with the exception of the Nebraska game, where Nebraska was another Big Ten school that was able to defeat an SEC opponent, with the exception that Georgia's been hurting all season. With the exception of that game, the SEC has shown once again that it is seemingly the most superior conference in all of college football today. And I don't, you know, we'll see what happens in the championship game, although I don't truly count Florida State as an ACC team. I like to think of them as an honorary SEC member.
Yep. And our guest today is Keith Strudler. We're talking sports. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Another huge game tonight. It's the Sugar Bowl. And Alabama, surprisingly not number one this year, is against Oklahoma, and that ought to be a fun one.
It should be a fun one. I think Alabama puts a hurting on them tonight.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, you know, Oklahoma is not, does not play necessarily all that well against physical teams, despite their performance against Oklahoma State. I think Alabama will manhandle them. And anyone who thinks this is going to be a letdown, you know, Nick Saban's not one of those guys you want to give a lot of time to prepare. He tends to use it.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that team is fully prepared to win. And look, let's say Auburn wins on Monday. Wouldn't it be interesting if you have Auburn 1, Alabama 2 in the AP polls at the end of the year, which is entirely possible.
Entirely possible. And before we talk about other things in sports, a couple of big-name players yesterday in college football announced they're going to forego senior year and go right to the NFL draft.
What was great is Jadeveon Clowney announced it in the post-game interview.
Yeah.
And he's like, look, let's not create any dramatics here. I'm going pro. I mean, look, everyone knew he was going pro when the season started, which was part of the criticism when he was seemed to be sitting on the sideline more than he was playing, that he was just kind of running out the string. But a couple of big-name players decide that they're going to come out. They're not. We're going to hear several more names in the upcoming days. You're going to hear, you know, Manziel, and you're going to hear all these people that are coming out.
But yesterday was Teddy Bridgewater and
Bridgewater,
Clowney.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Bridgewater, I think Bridgewater wanted to stake his claim as the number one pick. I've always been of the ilk that these guys should declare as soon as they can, because let's not get into these pretenses that these guys are preparing for, you know, their spring chemistry seminar. Let's not have any pretenses. They are moving on to the next part of their career, assuming we think of college football as a career choice. So
yeah.
I think it's sometimes refreshing to do that. But some of these athletes, you know, Clowney, both of the guys that announced yesterday, you know, if they had come out a year ago, they might have actually been better off. Both Bridgewater and Jadeveon Clowney both kind of came into this year being thought of as, you know, probably, you know, vying for that number one spot.
Yep.
Now I'm not so sure anymore, and there's certainly talk of Clowney dropping all the way to number five. It's in some ways kind of a sad commentary that these guys continue playing for their universities for free, and for that they get penalized.
Yeah,
Not only do they lose a year of potential earnings, but they actually lose whatever they'd get going moving from the number one pick to the number five pick. And there's something that's certainly wrong in a free market system with that.
Well, you've spoken of that before. And, you know, interesting that I've heard some predictions about this coming draft, and we're talking with the Keith Strudler today. We're talking sports. If you want to call, 800-348-2551. If you're on the line, hang in there. We will get to you momentarily. So I heard some predictions over the last week or two that there could be four quarterbacks in the first five picks of this NFL draft.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's a lot of teams are having to figure out, first of all, if they want to leverage their future on a quarterback. Because when you pick a quarterback in the top 10 or something, you know, that guy, you're essentially saying he's going to be starting on my team. Teams don't have the luxury anymore of letting their first round quarterback be mentored for a while. And that's just not, I mean, look, Geno Smith playing, and he has no business playing in the NFL his first year out. None. And he's done,
except by default. I mean, obviously.
Except by default, because, you know, he's got no one in front of him. But people demand it at this point. So they are going to want to see these people play right now. So NFL teams have to decide whether they're ready to leverage their future on that. But beyond that, teams really have to decide to some extent how much they want to change the style of their offense. Johnny Manziel is a great example of this. Teams have to decide when they draft him that they are going to move into a very different offensive scheme. He is not a traditional NFL quarterback. I mean, they may also have to decide they're going to hire a couple bodyguards to make sure he doesn't get in trouble.
Well, yeah.
But But, you know, teams are really kind of having to make these decisions. That was, I mean, Tim Tebow to a lesser degree. But if you drafted Tebow, you knew that you were going to have to do something different with him. And so I think the Manziel one is very interesting to me. And he was a, you know, kid who won the Heisman Trophy his first year playing in college.
Yeah.
Has certainly earned Texas A&M a whole lot of money. And so I think a lot of people are going to be intrigued not only by his career in the NFL with it 6'1", whether he can handle it, but also about the kind of payday he may or may not command.
Well, you know, and I look at him, and I looked at him do something absolutely extraordinary yesterday, but I look at him, and I'm still not sure, you know, in a Tebow sense, and I think he has a much better arm than Tebow ever will have or ever had, but is he an NFL-ready quarterback, given that the NFL, the whole paradigm of what it is to be a quarterback in the NFL is certainly changing? But I'm not sure about him.
You know, I agree to some extent because everyone thinks that an NFL quarterback needs to look like, you know, like Peyton Manning, where they're 6'5 and they're statuesque.
I think Cam Newton is the new standard there.
Cam Newton's a big guy. But, you know, look, I mean, and maybe I'm going back a little too far, but Doug Flutie did it, and he wasn't great, but he would have been a lot better if he had been in the NFL for longer.
Yeah.
And the kid up in Seattle, Russell Wilson, I mean, he's not a big guy.
True.
Not a big guy, and he's making it happen. RG3 I'm not sold on in Washington yet, and that's a team, by the way, if anyone does call to ask about coaching changes and
yeah.
What's the best place. I think that everyone thinks Washington's a great place to go. I think it's an awful place to go because right now people have made this assumption that RG3 is a franchise quarterback. He's had one somewhat good season, and I think the listeners would probably need to be reminded that about three times in the last 15 years, for about 3 weeks, we assumed that Michael Vick was the greatest player to ever play football.
Yeah.
And now he can't even start on an NFL team. So, you know, I think Washington's a very difficult situation. But quarterbacks like RG3, Russell Wilson, these are guys that play in that same mold as Manziel, where they're kind of wild, they run, they throw, you know, they do have decent arms. And I think Manziel has a good arm, too. But I think it can work. The question becomes, is he durable? Can he last?
All right, let's take a break here. Our guest is Keith Strudler. We're talking sports today. 1-800-348-2551. And I apologize to Kerry in Plainfield. Kerry, we're going to get to your call coming up on Vox Pop.
Support comes from Four Seasons Natural Food Store and Cafe, Saratoga Springs, New York. Locally owned and operated since 1988, open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week. FourSeasonsNaturalFoods.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting the exhibition Dinotopia, The Fantastical Art of James Gurney, ArkellMuseum.org. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org.
One 800 348 2551. It's Vox Pop on a very snowy Thursday, first show of 2014. Joining us is Keith Strudler, director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication, also a sports commentator on these airwaves. Let's go to the phones. Kerry in Plainfield, boy, you are a patient person. Thank you for hanging in there.
No problem, Ray. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. I'm a big fan of the stick and ball sports. Okay, but what I'm calling today is actually about NASCAR.
Okay.
Now, you know, only a few years ago, it had very high TV ratings, and, you know, it was a huge spectator sport right there with Major League Baseball and the NFL, and it seems like now there's much less interest in it. Now, you know, with the economy, that hurts it a lot. There's a lot of empty seats at all the tracks, and there's a lot less money for corporations to sponsor race cars and teams with and things like that. And it just seems, you know, with no pun intended, auto racing seems to be getting to they're putting the brakes on.
They're out of gas,
you know.
All right, well, that's a good point. And you know, not following it very closely, I certainly agree with your perception that it seems to have taken a step back from a time when it was right there in everybody's faces. Keith, what do you think?
I think that's true to certainly to some extent. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said corporations were starting to pull out. Running an auto racing team is an enormously expensive venture, and it requires corporate capital to make it happen. Corporations were either pulling out of cars or giving 15% less, and so you saw less people able to maintain these. I think some of the attributes of auto racing have been replaced by other sports. The NFL has continued to grow. They've become more popular. You saw maybe some people move into, you know, UCF or UFC, excuse me, into those kinds of sports. You know, I think the networks maybe levered, you know, put a little bit less into them. We saw this split up and the divergence of audiences, so that may have had something to do with it. I don't think that a lot of America really fully understands it. You know, we ran a poll at the end of the year to see what, you know, the greatest accomplishments of this year, and we had Jimmy Johnson, you know, with his sixth Sprint Car Cup, which to me is ridiculous. It should be, you know, if the Yankees had done that, we'd call it the greatest team ever. This was 6 out of 7 years he's won the title, and I don't even think people really understand it. I don't think people get what that means. They don't understand the Sprint Car thing. I don't think this race to the cup thing translates really well. The other thing I'd say with NASCAR, yes, it did become very popular. That was also at a time when baseball was really hurting. So people were looking for something else. I think fans have come back to baseball a little bit, particularly that demographic may have come back to baseball a little bit. And I think there's a natural cap on what NASCAR can do. There is a good segment of the American population that is never going to watch NASCAR. It's just not going to happen. I mean, you know, the good swath of the Northeast has absolutely no interest in NASCAR. California, most of it does not care about NASCAR. And so it still becomes somewhat of a regional sport. They have a hockey problem, I guess, in the same kind of way. And so there is, maybe lastly, and I don't know if this is true or not, and this is pure conjecture, there did feel something almost, I don't know, exorbitant, luxurious about NASCAR, you know, kind of grotesque a little bit, burning all this fuel, all these muscle cars, when all we kept hearing about was use less oil, this, that, and the other. And so maybe there was a part of it that didn't speak to the American ethos that maybe it had at one point.
Or at least a very small portion of the American ethos, because I think a lot of people just, you know, Americans love cars. I mean,
they do love cars. So, yeah, they do love cars, but I can tell you, my wife will never, and I was not a huge sports fan, but she'll watch some sports. She would never watch a NASCAR event. I mean, never. She wouldn't even understand why one would go through that exercise. And I have a group of sports fan friends who buy into that same idea. So I do think there's a cap on what. And she'd watch a football game. She'd watch a basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there's a problem that there's a good percentage of the American population still sees it as, you know, just turning around an oval, and they're never going to get it.
Keith Struther is our guest. Let's go to Joe in Beacon. Joe, you're on.
Hello, Keith. Hi, Ray. How are you? This is Joe from Beacon. Actually, Keith has video streamed with my class. I'm a teacher. I'm snowed in today.
Oh, terrific.
So a triathlete as well. So.
Keith, you know who you're talking to.
That's right.
I do have a question, though, that a lot of my students will probably want the answer to. I'm not a big football fan, but if Johnny Manziel does come out and the Texans have the number one pick, would it be smart for him to play in his home state? Would it be too much pressure? I know, Keith, that you're very familiar with Texas football. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they're not going to pick Manziel. First of all, they've already got a Texas product on their team. Boy, I'm blanking on names. The kid out of the University of Houston who set ridiculous records. I'm sorry, I'm having those mind moments. But so they already do have a rookie quarterback from the University of Houston who played high school football in Texas as well on their team. But if they're going for a quarterback, which they very well might, because they've had serious quarterback issues, they're going for Bridgewater.
Right, so, and Manziel is projected to go to Jacksonville, yeah?
Yeah, which would be, look, Jacksonville could use, first of all, they can play that style, but secondly, Jacksonville could use the ticket draw. And Manziel will be a great, great ticket draw. Jacksonville really needs that. But I don't think the Texans would do that. Now, in terms of would Manziel like it? Absolutely. I mean, he's a Texas football product. The other thing is that, you know, and I actually heard, you know, that Manziel could end up in Cleveland or some of these other, which would be an awful place for him. Because it's Cleveland. So,
oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, that's not, that wasn't necessary. But I do think, look, I don't think I don't think Manziel has ever succumbed to pressure. So it would be great for him. Certainly the Texans would sell tickets. But here's the thing. Texans Texans aren't going to have a problem selling tickets. All they need to do is win. They bring in Bridgewater, they'll do just fine. They don't need to bring in a Texas product to sell tickets. That wasn't the case when Jacksonville was considering bringing in Tebow, who, you know, went to high school in Jacksonville area, you know, played at the University of Florida. Jacksonville seriously considered bringing in Tebow just to sell tickets, I think. But I don't think the Texans need to do that, and I don't think that fits their long-range plans. And the Texans are already feeling very disappointed on what they thought was a franchise quarterback in Matt Schaub. I don't think they want to take another risk on a quarterback. I think they're going to go, if they're taking a quarterback, they're going for a sure thing at this point. And Bridgewater isn't a sure thing, but he's the closest thing they have right now.
Certainly is. Our guest is Keith Strudler, director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication and our commentator here on these airwaves. Let's go over to Jim in Great Barrington. Jim, you're on.
Yes, thanks. Hi. How are you, Ray? Hi, Keith.
Happy New Year.
Same to you. I'm actually a Marist alumni. I was part of a cross-country team. It was called the Running Red Foxes back in the day. Do they still have that team there, Keith?
And not only do they have that team, I am the faculty mentor for that team.
Wow.
Look at that.
Well,
coached by Pete Calabia.
That's fantastic to hear. I think it was Rich Stevens was a coach back in the day.
Yeah,
I'm going all the
cool.
way back to the 70s, but that's not why I'm calling.
Okay.
I'm calling about the World Cup, the Soccer World Cup, which starts this June in Brazil. And we're huge soccer fans, my family and I. We've rented a house down there, and now we're up against the problem of getting tickets to any match at all of the World Cup. I guess there'll be about 3 million tickets sold in 11 cities, and there'll be over 10 million people trying to get tickets. I'm wondering if Keith has any insight about how to get a match ticket to a World Cup game.
So now I'm a broker?
Yeah, that's it. Well, remember, no prices, please. This is public radio.
Give me a credit card number.
No.
This is like right out of American Hustle. For $5,000.
That's great. That's funny. Well, you know, I mean, they started with a first-come, first-served, then a lottery system, then a first-come, first-served again. There's different periods where you register with FIFA, et cetera. But we've been unsuccessful, and we're just chomping at the bit to figure out how do they allot these tickets. I mean, do you have any insight at all how this works? They're all in Switzerland choosing, you know, acting like, you know, some sort of deity and bequesting tickets on those that deserve them somehow. I don't know how it works.
As we know, the Swiss are neutral.
That's right.
You'll get a fair shake. But,
that's right.
But no, honestly, I know apps, and I'll be 100% honest. I don't know how the ticket allotment goes for this. I would imagine your best bet, unfortunately, is to get down there. And that's the case in many of these events, is get down there. What I would be very leery of, though, for the World Cup is counterfeits.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, this time, unlike previous World Cups, every ticket must have a passport number printed on the ticket. And they did this so that scalping can't happen, supposedly, outside any of the stadiums. And we had to pre-register all of our guests and family members, and, you know, we're putting in for our tickets. And if you get them, it'll have this number on it. But I didn't know. I mean, it seems to me like there were 30,000 tickets only sold to United States citizens. Three times that number were sold in Mexico in the last round.
Yeah.
And I just don't know where we stand in the world as far as number of fans go. Do you have any idea? We're not a huge soccer fan country, I guess.
No. And I don't imagine you're going to have a huge group of people traveling to Brazil from the United States for soccer. I mean, you'll have some, certainly. And just the number of people in the U.S. and the amount of wealth that's accumulated in the U.S. will make that more feasible. But I think in terms of percentages, you'll see a lot more countries head to Brazil, drive to Brazil. I mean, the South America will converge. You'll see, you know, vast number of Europeans go over. So that really seems to cut out the scalping market, but that's a difficult situation.
Mm.
I don't have any advice. My only advice would be to go to the Olympics because it's going to be real easy to get tickets to the Olympics.
Well, Speaking of the Olympics, you know, it is coming, and I think it starts on the second day or third day of our fun drive. But it's a pretty big deal, and there are some hopefuls, you know, for the Sochi Olympics. The classics, the Lindsey Vonns, and the U.S. hockey team looks like it'll be pretty good this year. Any thoughts on how we stand as a country coming up in Sochi?
In terms of how we stand, I think certainly we're going to put a lot in hockey. You know, you'll look for it. These things, first of all, the Olympics isn't necessarily, for the Winter Olympics, it's not about the medal count because we don't necessarily perceive ourselves as being the greatest Winter Olympic nation, and that's not where we put our pride. For us, the medal count is almost exclusively put in the Summer Games, where we either are up against, you know, Russia, or we're up against China at this point. So that's really where we put kind of our national kind of psyche and whether we're the best country in the world or not. But in terms of, I did actually watch quite a bit of speed skating last night. So I did watch quite a bit of that. I couldn't tell you how we will match up against the rest of the world. I think hockey will be a big deal, and I think the U.S. would like some redemption in hockey. Lindsey Vonn will be most likely the most watched star, and she's the one that everyone is talking about.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't seen, like we have in some past Olympics, I think the amount of coverage of any individual particular athlete. And I think that might speak to the fact that we don't necessarily have kind of the locked-in stars that we do in some previous games. We don't have Apollo Ono, you know, those kind of stars that are surefire guarantees.
Well, we have the big hockey stars who will be on that team. And speaking of stars, for a brief time here, we'll be joined by our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall, who, I don't know if you know this, Keith, is a tremendous figure skater.
Tremendous.
I didn't know that, but I kind of picked up on that on an email.
Yeah.
Either a figure skater or a figure skating fan, but she's actually a participant.
That's correct.
Yes.
Not just a member, she's a client.
I've been a competitive figure skater for pretty much all my life. Not going to say the number of years because that would belie my age, but...
So the Winter Games mean a lot to you.
The Winter Games mean a lot to me, yes. That was when I was 10 years old. That was my main goal in life. I wanted to be an Olympic champion or at least get to the Olympics. And since then, you know, my life has changed direction slightly. My aspirations turned more to journalism. However, you know, as a journalist, I can always try to go to the Olympics and cover it.
You know, how close were you at your peak?
At my peak, I passed the highest level of figure skating test. There's several levels. And then the level that we see on television is senior or elite or gold. I passed my highest levels, but you have to go through a series of qualifying competitions to get to that point. You know, just sort of to put it in context, skaters from each region compete against each other. That's regionals. Then they go on to sectionals, which is an entire swath of the country, say the East Coast, the Midwest, the Pacific. And then if you place in top four at sectionals, then you go on to nationals.
Mm.
And then from there, you know, it depends on the year and the qualifying, but then the top two or three or even one, in some cases, skaters will go on to worlds. And in an Olympic year, that will be the Olympics.
Wow. Now, so, who do you think this year has the strongest team?
Well, let's think. It depends on the discipline. There are four disciplines of figure skating. There's the women, there's the men, there is the pairs, and there's the dance. And then this year, which is really new in figure skating, this hasn't ever happened before in Olympic competition, they're having a team competition whereby each of the skaters that qualified for the actual disciplines in the Olympics, they will compete in a separate competition for a team championship. It's kind of like gymnastics is in the
right,
summer.
Right, so same disciplines, but also as a team.
Yes, yes. It's an added element of the Olympics this year. It's going to be interesting to see how it folds out because that means competitors have to, you know, perform additional programs, additional competitions.
So endurance will be a key over the period of three weeks for the Olympics?
Two weeks.
Yep.
Fortnight.
Yep. And the figure skating, you know, it happens throughout. So, no one's going to skate 5 days in a row kind of thing. Mm. I mean, typically, you do a short program and a long program. But anyway, to get back to the subject of the team, you know, it's a toss-up. We're not sure because this has never actually been done before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in each individual discipline, I can tell you who I think would do well, you know, in particular. But, you know, the Americans have dominated dance, but they do not dominate any of the other disciplines. Whereas Yuna Kim, the North Korean reigning world and Olympic champion, actually, you know, she's probably going to win again, you know, because she's pretty much unbeatable.
Unless she falls. I mean, you know.
That's possible.
It's like watching Evel Knievel do a jump. You know, he's a great motorcycle jumper
right. If
he makes it over.
Exactly.
So if she falls, then all bets are off.
This is true. But she's not going to fall. She's a robot. She's amazing.
She's a robot.
Yes.
North Korean robot. Well, all right.
I think. Now, the figure skating has always been kind of the marquee event of the Winter Games, as gymnastics has been for the Summer Games. It draws in an audience that may not be interested in sports, per se, and all those kind of things. It's also been a sport that's been critiqued, and you would know this from being on the inside.
Oh, absolutely.
For some of its practices.
I could tell you stories.
Well, do tell. You have a minute before the break.
That's what I was getting
to. Well, one in particular, you have to be you have to be in a certain way in the judges' eyes. They have to know you. And this, I'm talking about this is, you know, 10, 15 years ago before, actually more than 10 years ago, before the actual changes in the way that things were scored. You know, if you were from a certain skating club, if you had skated before a certain amount of judges, they're gonna look favorably at you and hold you up, despite the fact that you may have performed not as well as a competitor.
So this is domestically, or are you talking the international judges?
Well, it happens on an international level too, but my experience is domestic.
Right.
You know, I skated a very good program one time at regionals. You know, I landed all my jumps, technical proficiency through the roof, yet I was placed below several skaters who had fallen on several of their technical marks. And it was because, you know, I wasn't as high up in their esteem as perhaps.
So the style points trumped the technique.
The quote-unquote style points, yes.
Mm. Now, Jessica, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Did you ever feel that this sport unfairly turned young women, and girls, really, into kind of these, and I want to say this as politically correct as possible, but it's certainly something that's an issue in gymnastics, into these almost pixie girls, these hyper-sexualized young girls that have to fit a certain mold? Did you feel a pressure as an athlete, and do you feel this sport puts too much pressure on these young women to act, look, dress a certain way, as opposed to just being athletes that we can appreciate as athletes?
Honestly, in my experience, no. In my experience, it was always, you know, very focused on the competition. I was not focused on how I looked, or I was not, you know, feeling pressure from coaches or parents or anyone to look a certain way. And I never got the impression from the national and world competition that I watched that was the case. It was always more, you know, a focus on the athletic ability, on the jumps and the spins. But that isn't to say that others didn't feel that way. Again, it also depends on the culture.
Of
the country, exactly. Yep. But as an American skater, I did not feel that pressure.
All right, we got to take a break here, Keith, and we will be back on Vox Pop. The number to call, and I apologize to everybody who has waited. We're having so much fun with Keith Strudler and Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I have neglected you on the phone. Andrew in Williamstown, hang in there. 1-800-348-2551. Thanks, Jess. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Support comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. Newly renovated boutique hotel offering romantic Hudson Valley getaways, 12 guest rooms, modern amenities, located close to winter activities. The1850house.com. Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery. VESHDeerfield.com. Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock. Weight management, supplements, homeopathics, protein powders, and more for helping to keep New Year's resolutions since 1978. Facebook, Twitter, and sunflowernatural.com. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551, and a nice thing to do on a snowy day when many of us are homebound or laying low. Nice to talk about sports. Keith Strudler of Marist College is with us today. We were just joined by our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall, to talk a little bit about the Olympics. On to football now, and we go to Andrew in Williamstown. Andrew, you still there?
Yes, how are you?
Thanks for hanging in there. You're on.
Oh, you're welcome. I just had a quick question. I read an article, I think it was this morning, about how some of the NFL wildcard games haven't sold out their tickets yet.
Fascinating,
Yeah, and that threatens to invoke the blackout rules for the local TV stations, like out in Green Bay, for example, is the article I remember reading.
Isn't that shocking? I think yesterday there were 8,500 seats still unsold in Green Bay.
Right.
Football
yeah,
time.
Exactly. I think you saw the same information I did, Ray. And there was an interesting insight in the article that if you want to go with like three or four people to go to a football game, and you want to get decent seats and parking and food and maybe some souvenirs, you're spending almost $750 to $1,000 just to go to a football game.
Yep.
And now with the high def televisions and people, it's almost a better experience to watch it on TV than it is at home. And I don't think it's a fair comparison to baseball because there are so many less games in football, obviously. But nevertheless, do you think that is a bad omen for the NFL that, like in Green Bay, they're having trouble selling out playoff
tickets?
That's
a great question. You know, you'd think in Cincinnati, where, gosh, they haven't won a playoff game in 20-some-odd years, that they would be sold out in a heartbeat.
Right,
because
I remember Kenny Anderson out there, my goodness.
Oh, wow, yeah. You're as old as me. All right, Keith, what do you think?
I mean, do you want to sit outside in Cincinnati? If I weren't in a basement right now and I were looking out a window, there is nothing. There's nothing, by the way. You couldn't get me to the Super Bowl right now either, which I think is an awful, awful idea. But I don't think this is inherently a bad omen for the NFL. I don't think this speaks to the lack of popularity. I don't think this is the concussion thing. This is a symptom of the NFL becoming a made-for-TV sport,
Yeah. Certainly
to some degree. I mean, the reality is the experience is very, very good at home. People are still spending a lot of money on the NFL. They are spending a lot of money on sports. Look, people don't mind, and beyond that, people don't mind sitting outside for cold weather games. Look at what the NHL Classic is doing. They're getting
people
out for a game that you can't even see live like that.
105,000, yeah.
Yeah, and
no, it's amazing, yeah.
I think this really speaks to the NFL as a made-for-TV commodity. It's like, you know, the first time you ever go to see a live professional wrestling match, you're like, wow, this sucks. Like, I didn't realize they were talking to a small camera in the corner of the ring. Like, I get it now. And you know, it's hard to go back again after that. And I think to some degree there are enough people that have decided, hey, this is cool. But the weather's awful right now, too. And I think that speaks – I mean, you know, in the Midwest, this weather stream is rolling right through it. So I think there's probably a little bit of that. There's also this probably in Cincinnati a little bit now, too. I don't think Cincinnati fans could be anything other than cynical at this point. You know, maybe, you know, win a game, maybe show me something, and then maybe, you know, the next time they'd probably be more likely to pony up. So I don't think this is really a bad thing for the NFL, but I do think they need to figure out how to make sure that the in-game experience is better than the one at home.
Andrew, thanks a lot for the call. Do you think, Keith, that, in fact, they should change the blackout rules now?
Oh, yeah. It's an awful rule. It was an ill-conceived rule. You know, if you want to make something more popular because people don't care, the worst thing you can do is take off all the commercial advertising you have for it. I mean, I understand why the league wants to do it, and I suppose to some degree it served them well, but it really doesn't play as a long-term solution. The reality is what usually happens is some company ends up buying 5,000 seats to make it happen anyway. So maybe, you know, it's just a game of chicken at the end. But
well, I'm sure that there will be no blackout in effect for any of those games.
Oh, no. I mean, if you want to lose NFL fans for a generation, go ahead and, in Wisconsin and don't show the Green Bay game.
I mean,
and then you'll see how much people don't like the NFL.
I remember, now, I'm a lifelong Giants fan. I go back to about 1970 watching games. And so when the Giants were playing the Packers in the championship game in 11? It wasn't the championship game. It was 07. I was invited. A buddy of mine, his father's on the board of the Packers, and said, hey, come on out. We'll go to the game.
And this was the ice-cold game?
Though. Yeah. And I said, no way it's going to be too cold. But I had a long way to go. I mean, from Albany to Wisconsin was a bit much for that. But if I'm in the neighborhood, I'm going to that game.
I think so. I really hate being cold. I mean, I can't tell you. I don't enjoy it. I do enjoy watching football. I actually think I also see the game so much better. I mean, football is a game that really has a lot of intricacies to it. You know, it's hard to always follow the ball. You want some replays. I mean, you really, if I'm going to write about a game or if I'm somehow involved with the game, I really need to watch it on some kind of screen. Now, you could always bring your cell phone with you and watch it on a small screen as you're watching a game, too. But I have a hard time really, really watching. I love going to college football games a lot. And I enjoy nothing more than Saturday afternoons in Gainesville, Florida. But I'm going for the experience. I mean, I'm not expecting that I'm going to be able to. I go home and I figure out what actually happened.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny. Now, I go to Giants games, I don't know, not every year, but I might go a couple of times a year to see a Giants game. And you go now, and the screens are so big in the stadium, 30% of the people are not watching, especially in the cheap seats, so-called cheap seats in the Meadowlands, are not watching the field. They're watching the screen. You might as well do that at home.
That's Jerry Jones' world, where he put up the giant screens up there down there in Texas Stadium for the Cowboys, where you really do watch it, and you do have to catch yourself. Sometimes you're at an event, and I did this last time. I was at the Garden. I went for a college basketball tournament at the Garden, and we were sitting pretty far up, and they had screens, and I was watching. I was like, why am I here?
Yeah.
What am I doing here?
Exactly.
Now all I'm doing is buying $12 sodas.
1-800-348-2551. Keith Strudler, our guest. Here's one via email. Keith, it's from our old intern, Blaze Bryant. Hi, Ray and Keith. First off, happy 2014 to you. Indianapolis at home is going to beat Kansas City because the Chiefs have proven they simply can't beat a winning team. The Eagles will fly high over the Saints because New Orleans is an okay road team at best and will definitely have issues with the wintry elements of Philadelphia. Even though the Bengals are undefeated at home and beat San Diego on the road, the Chargers get even because they're hot and Andy Dalton is not. In Green Bay, the Packers win in a close game against the 49ers because Aaron Rodgers has shown he can pick apart great defenses. I agree with Blaze on the last point. I disagree about the Saints and the Eagles. And I could see his point on San Diego and Cincinnati.
I have a colleague right now who is already trying to figure out, who grew up in the Philadelphia area, who already is trying to figure out how he can get Super Bowl tickets, because he has already said, this will be the closest I've ever been to my team playing in the Super Bowl. Working on these stuff for the Philadelphia is going to the Super Bowl now. He's like, look at this road. It's so simple.
Yeah.
I don't think it's simple at all. And I understand that the Saints on the road in bad weather is exactly how you want them. Philadelphia does not play defense.
No. Nope. Although it has improved to some extent over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and they have a great running game. Is it enough? Somehow think the Saints pull this out.
Right. The idea that, you know, and the Saints have a marquee quarterback. I like the Saints in that game. I understand why Philadelphia fans would be excited. But I do also like that these Philly fans also assume then they're going to end up somehow going up to Seattle and walking through the
sure.
Seahawks.
Sure.
Which is, you know, the hardest place to play on earth. So,
well, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, all the these games are toss-ups. I do like – oh, boy, I mean, they're all difficult. I don't like Cincinnati. I don't trust them at all.
Okay.
So, but none of these games really, to me, are easy. I think that's the appeal of this year's playoffs.
And
you really look around, and there are a lot of teams that have a claim to being able to win any number of games.
And the Giants have proved it, that you don't have to be the best team in the regular season. You have to get hot, and that's why I have a feeling about Green Bay. I got a feeling that if they can get past San Francisco – They can do some damage. Let's go to Bruce in Kingston. Bruce, you're on.
Yeah, a comment or two about Johnny Manziel. I only saw him play once, and that was about a year ago. I didn't follow him this year. But what struck me as remarkable was that even though he was a quarterback, he really ran like a halfback. I'm not talking about scrambling. I'm talking about really running. I mean, he'd go back for a pass, and the next thing you know, he's gaining tremendous yardage or scoring a touchdown. And as a matter of fact, I think he ran for almost as many touchdowns as he threw. And then the other thing is, if he starts running, suddenly he's throwing a pass. So I think it makes him very hard to defend against.
Well, the systems are changing in the NFL as well. And so we talked about this a little bit earlier. It may translate. You see the Robert Griffins of the world, and as an old-time football fan, you say, well, in his rookie year, he is as fast as he's ever going to be. At some point, he will have to sit in that pocket and throw the ball. Keith, over to you.
Yeah, well, the other thing is eventually he's going to get hit by someone like Ray Lewis, who he's never seen. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney is so remarkable, for, you know, South Carolina
defensive end
who's just now going to the pros, is remarkable because he looks like a pro. And they don't see those guys in college. Most of the guys in college don't look like NFL prospects.
Yep.
Even if they're going to get drafted, they're still not developed yet. And so, you know, the problem is, at some point, just like Robert Griffin got hit, Johnny Manziel's going to get hit really hard by a couple of guys who are as fast as he is and are big and strong and 240 and run a 4.6, and they're going to knock him out. And that becomes, you know, I do believe, yes, they will lose all the time.
Yep.
And these quarterbacks do have to eventually change their game, and which good quarterbacks can do. I mean, quarterbacks can reinvent themselves. Look, Michael Jordan, as a basketball player, reinvented himself, you know, 3 or 4 times. So
yeah.
Athletes can reinvent themselves, but I really fear for these guys' health and safety and
right.
well-being.
But to reinvent yourself, you need to have the arm to begin with, and Russell Wilson, who can move, he can sit in the pocket, and he can throw the ball. And there are some of the new breed of quarterback. I mean, I think Cam Newton is a perfect example of a guy who can run or who can throw the ball 50 yards, 60 yards in the air.
Yeah, and I mean, he's a big guy, too. He can he could take a hit a little bit more. Mantel's got a nice arm.
Yep.
Mantel, I mean, I don't, you know, I couldn't speak to whether how much it's going to translate into the NFL game. Not everyone's Peyton Manning. I mean, not everyone has a cannon.
Yeah.
But you know, Peyton Manning can't move, so I mean, there's that side of it, though. But we will see. I don't know that Manziel is worth, and I think that's what everyone's trying to figure out. Is he worth, you know, taking a top five, top six pick on? I don't know.
Well, I mean, the whole picking of a quarterback is something of a coin flip. In other words, there are some great quarterbacks in college who never even – I mean, look at David Carr. Wasn't he a number one pick in the draft?
David Carr, yeah, and he for a small period of time with the Texans, you thought he was going to be something.
Yeah.
I mean, right? That there was you thought he was going to be something special, and next thing he just stopped developing. Look, I mean, Sanchez isn't that different.
You're right.
He wasn't that when he was taking the team to two consecutive AFC title games, people said this guy's going to turn into something special. He was a USC prospect. He seemed to have all the physical attributes, and he just stopped getting good. And who knows? Who knows if he'll ever be a starting quarterback again?
Well, I don't know if he'll ever do that on the Jets. Although, frankly, the kid they got in there now, he looked great for a game or two, and now he is back down to earth. So the Jets are in a bad place.
Yeah, and I don't know if Geno's an NFL quarterback or not, but I don't think he should be playing this year. They should have done what, like the kid that was playing up in Chicago, Cade McNown. They should have found someone of that ilk, let him run this for a year or two.
Yeah.
Taken the 7-9 record or whatever it is, and let Geno develop underneath. That to me is the smart thing. I mean, there's a chance that Geno gets banged up, gets a reputation, and never has the career that he potentially could have had if he had sat back. I mean, Tom Brady obviously is the prime example of that. Aaron Rodgers, prime guys that sat back a little bit. Aaron Rodgers is the case study. You know, I still think, to be honest, and I defer to all, you know, obviously the Peyton Manning lovers and the Tom Brady fans. Aaron Rodgers is a spectacular athlete. Anyone doubted Aaron Rodgers, just watch last week's game. He changes the dynamic of that team. A pretty good team already.
The last throw was one of the best things I have seen in the 2013 season. Keith Strudler is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Hugh in Lake Luzerne. Hugh, how cold is it in Lake Luzerne right now?
Well, it's 5 degrees.
Yikes. Oh, it's not that. I think we're lower than that here. Amazing. Amazing.
Switzerland. But I guess we're not that now.
No, Lake Luzerne is in New York.
We're 9 miles south of Lake George.
Right. It's not in Switzerland, as Keith was thinking. You're on with Keith Strudler. Go ahead, Hugh.
I just wanted to say, I'm a Penn State fan. My wife is an alumna. And when Central Florida beat them, everybody said, oh, lowly Central Florida. Penn State's had it. It was a fluke that they did well last year. And then South Carolina, oh, they almost lost to lowly Central Florida. You know, what's wrong with South Carolina? Well, I think maybe we've learned something. And to me, it's a matter of this buzz and reputation that guides all of our sports talk. It starts off with preseason rankings, and I wish they would just stop and let it all be ranked according to play on the field in that season. Because here they have to struggle to work their way up to number 15, and they're much better than that. They proved they were.
That's a good point. And Keith, you have about 1 minute, maybe a little less, to answer, and then we got to close this thing up. Go ahead.
Well, I'd say a couple things out of this thing. First of all, I think we've all learned that resumes mean absolutely nothing, because UCF's head coach got fired for falsifying a resume, and now he's the smartest guy in football. So maybe we can all stop looking at resumes. They should get rid of the preseason rankings, but they never will, because what are they going to publish in the offseason on ESPN.com? I mean, what are we going to talk about? So that's probably never going to happen. I don't think UCF would do that well, and TCU has shown us if they were playing in an SEC schedule, they would have far more than one loss. So there's also that to kind of consider. And really, as a Penn State fan, I think it's more exciting to think about who might be stepping in to fill in the shoes of your head coach right now, because that opening is one of the most intriguing openings in all of college football, of which there are many openings right now.
So, and it's kind of sad that their coach is leaving now. He's going to go to the Texans, yes?
Yes, he's going to go to the Texans. And he left with much frustration. And there were some quotes that became public that he did, you know, he had said to one of the Penn State reporters of, you know, I've had it with all this joke reverence.
Yeah.
I'm going to put my hand through a windshield. So
well,
that's a real interesting hire.
Keith Strudler, a lot of fun having you here. Stay warm, stay dry out there. And thanks to everybody who called in. And our support comes from Edward Garbosik, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. A Shokin Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokinCenter.org. River Bend Animal Hospital, Route 9 in Hadley, Massachusetts, providing small animal medicine and wellness care, general and referral surgery, canine rehabilitation, laser therapy, and dentistry. RiverbendAnimal.com. And Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, a gardener's destination. Best wishes for New Year. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Closed Sundays, storiesnursery.com. Thanks to Zach the engineer for handling the controls. Thanks to Carol Lapani for answering the phones. Thanks to our producer and contributor, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. Thanks again to Keith Strudler. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's the first ever Food Friday. We'll be talking dining trends, nutrition, and creative ways of cooking in the new year with some great guests, weather permitting. No, they'll be here. They've assured me they'll be here. It's Food Friday tomorrow at this time. Stay tuned now for a news update.